Revo Convo, Episode 55, The Value of a Well-Built Tiny House. Hello, Laura Lavoie. How are you today?
I am doing marvelously. How are you today, Andrew?
Doing well. Podcast episode 55 of the Revo Convo. We are on 55, and it's a glorious number to be at. Why? Because when you add 5 plus 5, it equals 10, and that's all I can come up with on the spur of the moment. Sorry.
10 is always a good number. It's usually the top of any scale.
Yes.
So.
True. And because 1 is the loneliest number, so ideally 10 would be the least loneliest number.
Right, unless the least loneliest number is like a million or something.
Well, that's true. I try not to go that high. If I can't count it on my phalanges, I try to stop my scale. So we're talking to William Rockhill today of Bear Creek Carpentry, which is pretty exciting because I've been wanting to talk to him for, I don't know, a while. And probably the reason why is because I really like what they do at Bear Creek Carpentry. They're a team of folks over there, and they do a lot of stuff. They do cabins, they do log structures, they do sheds. They actually do excavation and off-the-grid sort of things. But they also do tiny houses, and they do furnishings, that sort of stuff. It's kind of a one-stop shop, if you will. So pretty excited to talk to them about what it is they do. So the title today, what we're really talking about, though, is the value of a well-built tiny house. And as far as I'm concerned, Laura, I don't think that there really, when you get down to it, I don't think that there is a more important subject matter in tiny house structures.
Absolutely. Yeah, a non-well-built tiny house will only take you so far. So it is important to understand kind of the building principles and how everything fits together. And that's just one of the reasons we built our own tiny house, was so that we could understand how that all worked together and we could really know how our house was built.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And you know, I think that was one of the primary reasons we chose to build our own, was so we could be in absolute control of the integrity of the build. And I know, as I've kind of meandered through the interwebs, different tiny house pages and things like that, I've often seen William make comments about structure and about shear and about integrity and all that sort of stuff, and he's a valued opinion in my estimation. And so it's going to be nice to talk to him today. They also use a lot of the zip system, which we've seen become more and more popular in the mm-hmm. past maybe year and a half. So we'll talk a little bit about that. I think one of the largest projects I've seen using the zip system is Hari and Carl Berzin's quote-unquote big house that they're building. They utilize the zip system. And so that's probably the biggest thing that I've seen. William Rockhill and Bear Creek Carpentry, one of the things that they've most recently done is they worked on a project called TJ's Vardo, and the Vardo was brought into their shop for a repositioning, as well as a photo shoot and a trailer hitch adjustment. Really interesting. They did some finishing touches on the inside and that sort of stuff. Very, really pretty project, and it turned out really nicely. I don't think, for my purposes, I couldn't live in a gypsy wagon as the Vardo is, but as far as just eye candy, I think they're incredibly pretty designs and have a lot of interesting details to them.
Absolutely, and I love them. You know, I dream of owning one to glampkin. You know, I think that would be
totally
glamping mobile.
Totally. Well, I don't dream of one for glamping. But I don't dream of one, actually, and I'm a little concerned that you have dreams about a structure, but that's for a whole nother show. I actually have similar sort of things. I think that my I think that my dream would probably be something like I don't know. I'm really fond of streamliners these days, and maybe converting them into offices or guest cabins, guest shops, that sort of thing. So you can hear my daughter in the background. She is a fan of podcasting and recording, but only when it's her doing the recording, so she's not a fan of being taken away from the studio. But so hey, Laura, what do you say we give William a call and get him on the line and talk to him? He's going to be joining us by telephone today, so why don't we give him a call, get him on the line, and start talking about what Bear Creek Carpentry does.
Sounds great.
Excellent. Bill, are you there, my friend?
Yes, hi, Andrew.
Hey, hi, how are you? And of course, Laura, you're still on the line, correct?
I am still on the line.
Excellent. We have to admit that without modern technology, we would be nowhere with these podcasts. It would be me talking into a strange-looking white ball that's sitting on my table, and no one would be talking back. So we're pleased to have William Rockhill of Bear Creek Carpentry with us today to talk about the importance of a well-built tiny house. Now, Bill, if you could for a second, just give us a rundown of Bear Creek. What is it y'all specialize in, you excel in, other than building in the snow? What is it y'all do there?
Well, Bear Creek Carpentry was started in 1990 in the Adirondack Mountains. I moved from New York City as a union carpenter and in my own business down there to 300 miles north in the Adirondack Mountains. We had and raised four kids. The business is basically residential, commercial, and tiny houses. We build complete homes. We build pole barns, sheds, camping cabins, and tiny houses. And we have built over almost 300 structures, including full houses and tiny houses and sheds, in that time.
That's excellent. So it is safe to say, all of you out there listening, that Bill is not new to this game, and he's got a lot of experience behind him. So what he's going to talk with us about today is something you should probably be listening to. So I'm going to caution you to pull your car to the side of the road, get out your paper and pen, and start taking notes as we talk about Bear Creek Carpentry and the importance of a well-built tiny house. Bill, I'm going to put you on the spot, and I'm going to ask you, if there was one thing, if I were to keel over right now and not be able to finish listening to this radio show, what's one thing I would need to know about building a tiny house or a small structure?
I would say, Andrew, and it's got to do with any structure, And I think everyone has touched on that, and I don't think they've put the importance to it, is to have somewhat of a very specific plan or layout of what you want to do. You don't want to be discovering as you go and be also new to the building business. If you're a do-it-yourselfer, I can shoot from the hip as a quote-unquote a professional, but... And we have all the tools in our repertoire to do that because we do that regularly. But as a do-it-yourselfer, to change midstream roof, framing or window locations, or have to move floor joists or things like that, that's where I would say a finite plan ahead of time. Even if it's sketches, it doesn't have to be a $900 plan. Even if it's sketches on your own dining room table with simple drawings, but at least have a pretty good idea of what you're going to do. Mm-hmm. That's a big, big factor. I hope that's kind of what you were looking for.
Yeah, absolutely, because I think it's important. Now, in some of our build, we shot from the hip in terms of mostly interior. We did not, we knew where every window was going to go down to the 16th of an inch. We knew where our door was going to be, so, when we framed up our house, everything was in place as it should be. So I hear exactly what you're saying, and I agree with you. I think that not enough people put importance to that. One of the things that I hear from professional builders like yourself is someone may decide, you know, I had planned to put a 3-foot by 2-foot window on this wall, but it just looks too small, so I'm going to change it to a 6-foot by 6-foot window. And so they're, you know, they're left with a foot and a half of material on each side, which is, you know, not even enough to do your king studs and your dormers and that sort of stuff. So I can imagine that when you see some of these things online, you just think to yourself, gosh, I hope I'm not following them on the interstate one day.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, and you know, I have there's a tender spot in my heart for all the do-it-yourselfers because, you know, people don't take on building big houses by themselves, but there is something about the tiny house community that really strikes a chord in me that I really appreciate the sweat equity that these young people are mostly willing to put in. And they're really doing a good job. I mean, it's a daunting task to take on any kind of construction.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I'm, you know, in looking at y'all's website in terms of your cabins, y'all offer such a large variety of floor plans and sizes. It really is a lovely offering. Everything from, of course, the Hermit, which has been popular for a number of years, which is, I think, 8-foot by 16-foot. And that includes a little porch, all the way up into, made myself a note here, the Lodge, which is framed out to include a kitchen and a bathroom. And that's a 20.
Yeah, and we build, you know, that is, you know, when I designed the website back in 98 and finally launched it in 99, those were, for lack of a better word, kind of a menu with which people can choose and have a budget. Mm-hmm. We very, very rarely replicate exactly what's on the drawing on this website. Most of the time, someone comes and says, well, I'd like to have the Hermit, but, and, you know, and then it goes from there. And right now, we're in the middle of three houses that are 20 by 32, 24 by 36, and you know, another 16 by 32, and those are, you know, actually, you know, bigger than what's on our website.
Sure,
and
sure.
With full foundations and state-of-the-art heating systems, so we really build a good percentage of our houses are year-round, you know, where tiny house, you know, on wheels is, you know, someone's going to outgrow that once they have a family or they want to retire, you know, so.
You're not telling me nothing I don't know.
Well, and, you know, I have four kids and they all have four friends each and, you know, our house looks like feeding the army every night.
Yeah,
so I could never, you know.
Well, that's why I've given strict instructions to my daughter, even though she's only, you know, two and a half years old, that she's not allowed to ever have friends. We refuse to let her have friends. I will not.
Hey, look, Andrew, in about 15 years, let me know how that works out for you.
Yeah, yeah. I'll let you know when she finally gets over the resentment and starts speaking to me again.
Yeah, yeah.
One of those houses that y'all are working on right now, is that would one of those be the little cabin at Silver Lake? Is that one of the ones you're talking about?
Yes, that one is 24 by 32, plus it has a an 8-foot porch, so it's really overall footprint of 24 by 40.
It looks so beautiful. I love the siding that y'all are using. I don't quite know what you call it. Where, you know, it's. It's like
half log. Yeah, half log.
Yeah, it's just gorgeous. It gives it that, you know, it really does give it that pop. It makes it stand out from just a, you know, a traditional sticks and bricks sort of thing. And that brings up something, because in some of those pictures you can see very clearly that y'all are utilizing the zip system. Can you tell the listeners a little bit about the zip system? We've seen questions come up in the tiny house community before, and some people are starting to use it. Can you tell me from your standpoint about the zip system and how it...
Well, I could tell you where it all started. You know, the company that makes it, I think it's Huber, H-U-B-E-R, is the manufacturer. And their main product that they first came up with is something called Advantec flooring. Now, they came on the scene, I'm going to say it was 1998 or 99. They came on the scene with that, and that was a new geometrically designed tongue and groove, mm-hmm. as opposed to the straight, simple tongue and groove that was used with plywood, like three-quarter mm-hmm. CDX, which is C-side, D-side exterior. Plywood is just what everyone used on their floors, or a BC plywood tongue and groove. And I tell you, I had two houses that I had built previous to 98 that the plywood was exposed to weather for 3 weeks, and both plywoods delaminated. And fortunately, I just footed the bill for the labor, and the manufacturer of the plywood gave us the new plywood to replace it. But my supplier came to me with the Advantech, which was Huber's first product, and said, this is what you should be using from now on. This is a waxed 3/4 inch, full 4x8, including the tongue. And the tongue goes together geometrically, which you don't have to slam it with a 2x4. And I used that religiously for a couple of years. And then Huber, the same company, came out with the Zip system. And the Zip system is 7/16 OSB, basically, for the walls, which has a green coating, almost like, you know, we're all outdoors people, but you know what Gore-Tex is, right?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. It's very similar to Gore-Tex in that, you know, water sheds off of it, yet, you know, air permeates through, and it is designed as the vapor barrier liner instead of having to put Tyvek on the outside of a house. It lays much flatter and straighter than any kind of plywood you can buy. I don't know, Andrew, you sound like an experienced guy. I've watched your videos. You know, plywood is not flat when it, you know, it's always got some kind of memory. The Zip system is like perfect. And now the other product they came out with, which is a 5/8 thick, it's like the OSB, and that's coated with a red, you know, water. It's a little bit heavier duty, and it's not as breathable as the walls off, and that kind of eliminates the need in most cases for felt underneath shingles. We still use the felt because we're diehards. You know, we still use felt and water barrier around the perimeter. We do a lot of metal roofs, and what's great about the 5/8 on the roof is you, with it being tongue and groove, and we frame 16 on center anyway, it acts as, with the tongue and groove, it supports itself in between framing members.
Mm-hmm.
And then we use the 4-inch tape, which comes part of the system. It's about $20 a roll if you buy 10 rolls, $25, $27 if you buy one roll at a time, and it's 90 feet in a roll, and we tape all the joints, and you tape it like you do a roof. So you start at the bottom, and then you overlap the joints, and you basically have 3 months at minimum of waterproofness on a roof before you even put the roofing on.
Oh, wow.
I swear by it. And another note, you know, when you're doing a tiny house, putting on Tyvek is kind of a negligible problem as far as safety, and people say safety with Tyvek. Well, I've done a number of houses where they're, you know, 1, 2, 3 stories tall up into the gable end. And invariably, Tyvek is always put on at the last minute, mm-hmm. when all the scaffolding is down or whatever, and someone leans a ladder on it, and the ladder isn't stable. I've seen more guys fall leaning against a building with Tyvek than any other reason for a ladder falling.
Huh.
Okay, because it's like an ice skating rink sideways.
Okay.
You know, it's just a simple, obviously if you're building with scaffolding, which we use a lot of scaffolding, you know, you're much safer, and then you use Tyvek. We've kind of completely eliminated using Tyvek almost now, unless for some reason something from the Zuber is not available. You know, that's happened where they've saw a big storm and all of a sudden they sell out of it or something like that. It's a little more pricey, but I think it's worth every penny.
Yeah, well, you know, and the thing is, too, when you say it's a little more pricey, you know, you have to think, for me, you have to think about the integrity of building a tiny house. You know, you're not, overall, you're not spending that much. I'm not breaking this down to square footage, but overall, you're having a reduced budget than if you were building, say, a 1,000 or an 1,100 square foot house.
So, oh, without a doubt.
So that expense is kind of minimized in the sense that, hey, you know, it's not that much more added to my overall budget, but isn't it worth it? Because one of the arguments I hear all the time, one of the things I see all the time, is people scrambling to get their house dried in and to get the roof on, because even though they can't put it into words, they're aware of the factors of exposing your sheathing, exposing, you know, your sub, that sort of stuff, to the elements. And so a system like this sounds like an incredible advancement that will help all of us, whether it be a small house, a big house, or anything in between.
Oh, it's tremendous. Yeah.
The cost is, you know, such a... I'm willing to pay, as a builder, as a DIY builder, I'm willing to pay for that extra added insurance and the extra value that it comes with. And I remember doing a house wrap on our tiny house, and it was like wrapping a giant, very awkward present. And I would love to be able to avoid that step.
And see, I think in some ways, you know, kind of subconsciously, maybe that's why I chose the design I did, because everything was very, for lack of a better word, square. We have a rectangle-shaped house, so I didn't have a lot of things to work around. It pretty much, Laura, where you say you had to wrap, you know, an odd-shaped Christmas present, all we did was wrap a shoebox.
Well, and there's another Uber, you know, I actually have a link on my Facebook page, but you can actually go to Uber and then go to their test link, and you will see a test where they take like 5 gallons of water, and you have a standard installation of Tyvek over OSB, and they hammer tack with the staples, and you know how that goes. You know, you're whacking the Tyvek, and you're actually penetrating the Tyvek. And then they have, next to that, they have the Uber system with the tape and the same nail holes through framing, and there's no leaks. So, mm-hmm. You know, if you go and look, not only is it faster, you know, a better product in the long run because you have uniform, basically vapor barrier liner over it, but you have... the ease of only one installation. You know, you're really only installing the plywood and tape. And another note about the tape is we like the tape so much is we use it on all our windows now, too. So when we install a window over the Uber system, we actually use the 4-inch tape, even albeit $20 a roll. We put it around every window. So that's besides silicone, you know. So it's just a really nice product.
Yeah.
I'm sold on. I can say enough about it. You know, I've actually been asked. Some of our products have been used as example on their website because we do big barns and things. And I swear by their products. And I'm not trying to. I don't make a dime. You know, I'm just telling you that they're no question. If the budget is there and we're not, you know, super. You know, trying to save $5 a board or $6 a board, I don't know what the difference might be at any time, I would definitely go with the Zip system.
Well, that's fantastic. So, guys, if you're out there listening and you've used the Zip system on your tiny house or consider using it, let Laura and I know. Tell us about it. You can email me at andodom@gmail.com, or you can email Laura at...
omlavoie@gmail.com.
And let us know about your experience with the Zip system. We'd love to know, and maybe even get somebody from the Zip system on to talk to us about it. In the meantime, we're talking to William Rockhill of Bear Creek Carpentry. You can find them at Bear Creek Carpentry. That's BearCreekCarpentry.com. And of course, that link will be in the blog post that goes along with this podcast. I want to thank you again, William. We're not ready to quit talking to you, but I want to thank you again, especially for schooling us on Zip. That's probably, Laura, the first conversation I've really had with someone who has a lot of experience with it, and that was well worth it for sure.
Absolutely, yes.
for sure. So, William, I want to talk.
I got plenty of time. So, you know, I set the morning aside for you.
Oh, great. Well, look, I wanted to ask you another question. I'm fascinated by this idea, and I just want to share with everyone that you build these things. You build bus stops, people. For those of you who did not grow up in the country, let me tell you about bus stops. It doesn't matter what the weather is like, whether it be raining or sunny or snowing or whatever, your mom and daddy are going to send you to school, whether you like it or not. And if they don't send you to school, they're at least going to tell you to go out and wait for the bus as if it is coming, because that's their time to have without you around. And so bus stops, our landscape growing up was dotted with bus stops. And it wasn't, like I say, just for rain or snow, but it was also for sun, because that sun beating down on you first thing in the morning when you're clean from taking a bath or a shower or whatever, and you've got your school clothes on, once you break a sweat, those are no longer nice school clothes, and you just start to pouring out there when it's close to the end of the school year. So tell us, William, what is it that made you want to start building bus stops?
Oh, well, it's not like it was a mainstay, but kind of we built one for our own children. I had four waiting at the bus stop, and then the neighbors would come across, and that was one stop on the road. We lived on a 3-mile dead end road, and our bus comes an hour before the kids get to school. We built a number of them for exactly the same reason, Andrew. We're in a pretty rough climate in the Adirondacks. It was 15 below zero here this morning, actual temperature. And it's supposed to be 25 below tomorrow morning. Right now, it's only about 8 degrees out. I put the bus stop up so that it's really a wind block.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the bus really doesn't have a lot of time to wait. And, you know, they have a long way to go and pick up a lot of kids. So we send the kids out a few minutes early, and a lot of other parents do too.
Sure.
We happen to build a much bigger one for our children, but we have done all different kinds, outhouses, bus stops, wood sheds, real sheds, garages, you know, all kinds of buildings. You know, bus stop is not a priority, but, you know.
Sure.
We have fun with it, though. You know, we have fun with it. We usually name it after the kid, you know, whoever it is. We make them a little sign, you know, John's Rest or whatever it is.
Yeah. Well, you know, you see a lot of structures that are that same thing, that bus stop design. You see a lot of those on the Appalachian Trail for the same reason. Mm-hmm. They give hikers a chance to get out of the elements, to, you know, take a nap for a few minutes and stay out of the sun or stay out of the rain. So there's a lot more application than just as a bus stop. But it's just cool, Bill. It's just cool because you don't see a lot of people who build things like that. And the reason I bring that up is because some of the products that y'all offer, number one, they maintain the structural integrity, the same structural integrity that you put into your largest houses. But number two, they serve a purpose. And I think above all, that's what the tiny house community at least should stand for, is that they serve a purpose for the community at large. They're not just structures for the sake of structures. They serve a purpose. So that's
oh,
why
yeah.
I wanted to bring that up.
Well, we do. We you know, it's we build. A lot of people say this, but we build with longevity in mind. You know, it's not the simple whap together texture 111 2x3 32-inch on center that you can get from any. You know, I'm not going to name anything, but factory built.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we take the time. We're 16-inch on center. We usually overframe. You know, my nickname is Overkill Bill, and I don't mean that in, you know, that's, let's say nothing I've built has fallen down, and I'm knocking on wood as I say that, you know. It's also a really big part of our family, because we're a family of builders, and it's very important to us that things last through. You know, we get 150, 200 inches of snow here a year. So.
Absolutely. Yeah, it is definitely And that's one of the things that I like so much about Bear Creek Carpentry is it's not just you, it's something, a legacy that you're passing on. You're teaching a craftsmanship to the next generation in your family. And so many of us are just now starting that craftsmanship and trying to teach ourselves and learn from others so that we can then pass it down. Because I think it's very safe to say that for a large part in our nation, a good level of that craftsmanship has been lost, whether it be to, you know, the very computer that I'm on, or, you know, the idea that unless you have a white collar job, you don't have a quote unquote real job or a job that matters. So I applaud you for that, because I think there's a lot to be said for that, and, you know, a lot to be said for what y'all have to offer. I want to ask you too about the cabins. Now, when you get approached to build a cabin or something, do you find that it's more individual owners, or do you get approached by, say, you know, for lack of better companies to mention, like KOA, who says, hey, we want 10 of these cabins that match, that sort of thing?
Oh, 99% of the time, Andrew, it is an individual. Most of the time, it's someone either starting out or someone retiring, because all of us working folk in the middle are so busy with our lives, raising kids and whatnot. Sometimes they're vacation getaways, yes. Or, like, we just built one last year in North Creek. People bought 40 acres. They came to me and said, now right on a beautiful pond, and said, well, you know, we're in the middle of our working lives and we want a place here that's going to be strong and last at least 8 or 10 years until we decide to build a real house. Mm-hmm. And we had to go in by trail and carry everything in, and, you know, plug in generators on sleds and whatnot, things like that. And, you know, we build in remote places. It's not always pull up to a driveway and, you know, back in a nice, simple building. A lot of times we build in places that we build by boat. So we go out on an island, out to an island or a point of a land in, like, Racket Lake or some other lake where you cannot drive to. And we, you know, the building is designed and built, and the logistics is to get all of the materials there in order to build. But we also build where we go over the ice, where we skid. We build certain kinds of sleds, and we skid the material, the logs, or whatnot, across lakes. So people starting out, they want something small and efficient is our specialty. That's really
right.
What we do.
Right.
You know.
Well, I want to ask you, you know, for all of our folks listening in the Northeast, especially in the upstate New York area and that region up there, if they were to contact you and say, hey, look, you know, I'm really keen on having a tiny house, but my vision is for the inside, not the outside. I don't know how to make sure that, you know, the structural integrity is there and that it's going to withstand the test of time and that sort of stuff. Is Bear Creek somewhere that they can contact and have y'all build the exterior of the house, get it to where all they have to do is go inside and put their touch on it, throw some cabinets in, put a bench here, a seat there?
That's called a shell, and we do that a lot, Andrew, and a lot is, I'm going to say, a third of our projects, you know, I'm guessing a quarter to a third of them are exactly what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
We call that a shell. And that means that the customer has either the budget for the shell and the foundation, or concrete piers or on skids, doesn't matter what size it is, and they want the shell done quickly, efficiently, professionally, and they can have, you know, a place for home and try that they can actually camp out in.
Mm-hmm.
While they go through the deciding factors of the inside.
Yeah.
Yes, of course, we go through locations of windows and propose location of kitchen. We may even frame the bathroom, but not build it.
Right.
The one in Silver Lake is an exact example of that. That started out as a shell only. We built the shell. It's up. Now they've come to us you know, subsequently and say, okay, now we want to do the whole inside. We're glad to do that, you know, especially something so close.
Yeah, absolutely. Laura, I think people just want a shell. Oh, yeah, shells. Laura, I think, honestly, that that, you know, this shell carpentry could very well be the future of tiny houses if it's going to go on a larger scale. I don't believe that enough people are as qualified as they may think they are to build something that's safe to live in, and that will withstand kind of the elements that perhaps are going to put them in. And I really predict that if tiny houses are going to go, for lack of better words, more mainstream, that shells are going to be the future. Shells are going to be the way to go.
Absolutely. It gives you the opportunity to customize it inside, but it allows you to hire somebody, a professional, to build a really sound structure.
Yeah, and the other, you know, the other thing is time. You know, I always hear do-it-yourselfer say, well, you know, I took a year to do my tiny house, or I took 9 months to 6 months, and I'm not laughing because I am so proud to see someone do their own, and I'm not going to name names, but I've watched and paid attention and have commented to try and help a number of different people, and we have the ability to do a frame in a few days, as most professionals do. So if you could get the frame up and you have the budget for a frame and the sheath and even the location, if you have your rough openings, your windows, and you know the tentative locations, that would even be better, because then the headers will go in, and you mentioned Jack and King and clean Jack and King studs and whatnot, and your sills. If you can put all of those in one fell swoop and have a shell, now you've got somewhat of a clean palette for you to go in and take your time and wire and take your time and plumb and take your time and finish, insulate, all the things that you really, the discovery and making it work is not going to change the structural outcome of the house.
Yeah. And you know, William, I think that's why we see so many tiny housers or read so many blogs and small housers who are trying very desperately to go to, you know, one of the big box hardware stores and purchase, you know, one of these sheds or garages or something like that, and convert them into homes, because they don't trust themselves. They don't feel like they have the time or the knowledge to do the exterior, the shell, but they feel like they do have it or can, you know, have the time to learn how to do it, to do the interior. So I definitely think this is something that that needs to be included in the overall conversation of small houses. Absolutely.
Oh yeah, and you could even see that in I don't want to name names, but a very famous tiny house company is now offering shells as part of their repertoire now, which is a very good idea, because. And you know, I kind of think it's great, because that's kind of the easiest part, for lack of a better word, to professionals, because,
right.
You know, it diametrically opposed, you know, it's the hardest to the do-it-yourselfer, because it requires cutting up a whole lot of lumber and sheathing and all of, you know, we have all the air tools and everything else and fasteners and scaffolding, and, you know, we could scaffold a complete house in minutes, you know. For lack of a better word, the easy part to anybody building houses is the frame. Mm-hmm. The hardest part, which takes the most amount of time, is the infrastructure, the plumbing, the heating, the insulation, the, you know, taking the time and trimming out the windows nicely and putting in floors. And you kind of get the best of all. Look, you probably get a better price from someone doing a shell, and then you taking the time and doing the lion's share of the tedious work, which is the inside work.
Right, right. Yeah, that's very interesting. Well, look, William, our time is almost up, but I wanted to thank you so much for joining us today, for making yourself available. Again, folks, we're talking to William Rockhill of Bear Creek Carpentry there in New York and the Adirondack region. And so, Bill, I want to thank you for joining us on behalf of the Revo Convo. Thank you for sharing your knowledge and your company and years of wisdom and fine construction. Thank you.
You're very welcome. And I'm glad to do it. And if you ever have another time you'd like to speak about another subject, I'm available.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much. You take care now.
All right.
Laura, what a wealth of information. I had absolutely no idea that that Bill was going to share with us so much. He just seems like an endless resource of knowledge.
Absolutely, no, yeah. All of the information about specific things, like the zip systems and things like that, you know, how long it takes to build, doing the shells. You know, I was most fascinated when he mentioned that he does a lot of kind of off-the-beaten-path building, because I can certainly relate to that, since we had to do the same thing with our house.
Yeah, when he said that, I kind of had this image of him, like, with an Iditarod team, you know, like, pulling some sleigh filled with carpentry tools and lumber up a snowy embankment or something. It seemed very storybook-esque, but at the same time, also very pioneerish.
Absolutely. We threatened to get a dog team when we were building our tiny house, but we had instead an unreliable ATV that only worked when we didn't need it.
Yeah. So it makes me think, if you had like a dog sled team to carry stuff up the mountain, if you were building like a tiny house on the beach, would you have like jet skis pulling a barge?
I imagine so, yeah.
That would kind of be cool. So, no, but I think we should have William back on the show because, I understand he's got a huge workshop that can house multiple tiny houses at one time. He's got a barrage of tools and a load of experience, as we were finding out. So I definitely think we should try and have him back on the show. Folks, if you want to hear more from Bill and if you have any specific questions you want to ask him as a master carpenter, please feel free to email us at andodom@gmail.com, or you can email Laura at
lmlavoie@gmail.com.
That's right. But, folks, it is that time for us to ski-daddle along back into our tiny little worlds and leave you be for a week until we are at you next time for another episode of the Revo Convo. This has been episode 55, talking with Bill Rockhill of Bear Creek Carpentry. Thank you so much for listening. We thank you for being here. Have a great day.